Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm, the first cheesemaking co-op in Vermont. For more information, visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, and welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito with Groundworks, Inc. Today, I'm flying solo, as it were. Alice Krieg, my cohort and co-host, wasn't able to make it today, but we have a great show in store. Collectively, Alice and I design and build gardens with our company in New York City and in the surrounding area. And this show is an offshoot of that, so to speak. It aims to bring the culture to horticulture. And as always, we begin each show this season with the horticultural honor roll. Thank you, Joe. Today's horticultural honor roll honoree is Carl Ludwig Springer, who was a German botanist born in 1846 in Melkenberg and lived till 1917 and died on the island of Corfu. Springer lived in Naples from 1877 to 1907 and was a partner in the horticultural house of Damen and Company, actually in Naples, Italy. David Fairchild, who was also a very famous botanist, praised Springer as a brilliant botanist who had established a nursery. He was one of those real plantsmen who both know the names of plants and know how to grow them. He enthusiastically collected seeds for botanical gardens and freely gave of his knowledge to others. Unfortunately, the eruption of Vesuvius on April 4th, 1906 buried his plants under volcanic ash, destroying hundreds of his best specimens. In 1907, Kaiser Wilhelm II purchased a beautiful palace in Corfu, and Springer became the supervisor of his garden. And Springer was also deaf. He was very deaf, but he surrounded himself with plants. And unfortunately, he died an untimely death as a hostage of war. He was imprisoned by the Serbs, by the Germans, in the middle of the First World War. But after an intervention by the local administration, they let him go. He stayed in Corfu until his death some years later. Now, he's had quite a number of plants named after him, species from as diverse as asparagus to magnolias, but also, and appropriate for the show today, a beautiful tulip, which is now extinct in the wild, Tulip Springeri. And Tulip Springeri, I believe, is available to purchase, even if it's no longer available in the wild, no longer in its habitat, which I think it's native to Turkey. Tulip Springeri was first described in 1894 by the Kew botanist J.G. Baker, based on the material that company that Springer worked for imported. He imported many bulbs from Turkey. So it honors him, and we honor, we love to honor, especially dead German botanists, it seems, on the show. So here's another one, Mr. Springeri. Now, I wanted to mention that a lot of this information that I'm sharing with you came from the Royal Botanic Garden Kew's website, and that's one of my favorite websites and one of the best websites for plant lovers. In fact, in a couple of weeks, less than 2 weeks, actually, Alice and I are going to be going to the Royal Botanic Garden Kew, and we're going to do a post-trip recap on the show in November to tell you all about our exploits there. We're very excited about it. Now, today, we have another great plantsman and nurseryman on the show, on the line. His name is Brent Heath. He's the founder, along with his wife, Becky, of Brent and Becky's Bulbs of Gloucester, Virginia. Brent, are you with us?
I'm with you, Carmen.
Hi, great. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. I gave a very brief bio of you, and I want to ask you a little bit about how you got started in the bulb business. Your wife, Becky, told me a little bit about the story, but I'd love for you to share it with our audience. Tell us how you got started.
Carmen, I grew up in a bulb family. I grew up digging daffodil bulbs and picking their flowers, and hard, hot, dirty work. And it's a business that my grandfather had started back in 1900. And luckily for me, I was interested, and I came back and bought it from my parents in 1972.
So it's a third. You're a third generation plantsman.
Yes, and now we have a fourth generation, which is really neat.
That's fantastic.
Oh, our son Jay is with us. He and his wife Denise are now part owners in the business.
Oh, that's great. I was mentioning before you came on that my partner and co-host Alice Krieg and I had met you many, many years ago at the Horticultural Society, where we heard you speak. And there are many, many people that supply bulbs. There are importers, and then there are, you know, wholesalers and. But I think of you and Becky as bulb missionaries, Brent. You know?
Oh, well, thank you. We'd like to be thought of that
yes,
way.
Yes, you not only share the bulbs with your incredible catalog, you sell them, but you share the knowledge. And you have a lot of bulbs in your catalog. I mean, from last count, I took a cursory look at the catalog online. You have probably over 100 tulip varieties alone, right?
Oh, indeed. Indeed.
So my question to you is, how do you choose what you're going to offer each year, and do you actually grow some of them?
Carmen, we do. We grow some of everything in the catalog, both on a pot as a container plant and in a trial garden.
Okay.
Now, do we produce them here? We produce some of the bulbs that grow best here. All of the rest are produced wherever they're grown best. And the majority of the daffodils and tulips are best grown on a lake bottom in the northwest corner of Holland called the Brazond Annapolona Polder.
Okay. So the
and
Dutch,
they're grown
the Dutch
by
are good.
A series of about 50 different growers who we contract with.
That's great. So how do you, I'm sure you've been to Holland many times. How do you choose what you're going to offer each year? What's the criteria?
Well, Carmen, we've had a business in Holland now for 30-some years, and we do work back and forth with the Dutch bulb growers quite a lot. I go every spring, and I walk the peak bulb season there, which is typically last week of March, here it's last week of March, first week of April. There it's last week of March, first week of May. I walk the bulb fields and visit these growers, look at what's coming new. We introduce our own new daffodil seedlings there. We have a grower group who are licensed to grow them, but I'm always looking for something significantly different or better. When we see something that we think has promise, we ask the growers for a trial. We bring it here. We grow it on a pot. We grow it in our trial garden. We also plant it out in either Becky's garden and or my garden. And Becky and I don't garden together. We garden in a different way. So it's a bit easier for each of us to have our own gardens. And once it's proved to be different or better, longer lasting in bloom, better perennial, etc., then we, by committee, I am putting together the list of potentials for next year to add. And we'll have to take some away, and unfortunately they're the things that just haven't sold as well or may have some issues with storage problems, etc., or health issues.
I mean, see some bulbs that come back that are available year after year, some classics that obviously, like Angelique, the tulip Angelique and certain Narcissus varieties that are just keep coming back because they're reliable.
And some are even heirloom.
Yes.
Some have been around for hundreds of years and continue to be popular, but they're typically popular because they're good performers.
Yes.
They grow well. They perennialize well. Now, most spring-flowering bulbs, daffodils and tulips, do not naturalize. There's a misuse of that term. What it actually means is a non-native plant that reseeds and spreads around. Daffodils and tulips typically don't do that. Some of the little bulbs, some of the special bulbs do.
Oh, yes. I've had an experience with that, like the Ifion.
It's
20 years old, and no matter how much I hack at it, Brent, it will never leave. It will never be removed. I mean, I love it.
Well, good. I'm glad you like it.
I do.
I think it's one of the great ones.
Well,
I put hearts in front of all the my favorites, and my favorites tend to be those ones that persist.
Yes.
And that last for a long time and bloom and things like that.
And we, you know, as gardeners in the city, when we garden for other people, we treat tulips as annuals, Brent, you know, because the display annually is not as reliable from year to year, you know, and then we put annuals on top, you know, later in the season. So we find that it's better to start fresh each fall with new bulbs.
And Carmen, we think that's great. We'd love to sell new bulbs every year.
That's what we just compost them up.
But you do have a point.
Yeah.
Tulips are high mountain desert plants. Mm-hmm. And even in Holland, they're dug every year.
Yeah.
And but they need a dry, hot, dry summer dormancy. And when subjected to mindless irrigation that keep them wet in the summer, the bulbs just rot.
Yes.
They're also edible. Critters do like to eat them.
Yes.
So, some, however, perennialize better than others. And we find often the Darwin hybrids, if you've got a spot where you can leave them. But they're relatively inexpensive, and Becky calls them the parents of the bulb world. You know, they're the showstoppers. So plant them as an annual and enjoy them. And
that's what we recommend.
Have plenty more for you next year.
Yeah, exactly. And people, you know, people are getting busier and busier in their gardens. They don't necessarily have time to divide things and spread them around.
Indeed.
So our suggestion is always start fresh. It helps the bulb business, and you'll have a better display generally.
The other exception is the little species tulips.
Yes, that's
gardening
right.
Gardening in containers is becoming quite popular, particularly for people who may do rooftop gardening or something like that. And little species tulips love growing in containers. Again, they like good drainage, and they like a hot summer baking. They want to be dry, and it's somewhat easier to keep a container a little dry on the dry side. But they're great companions. They're wonderful to have planted around a dwarf conifer or something that's in a container. The two are ideal together. And many other perennials following the bulbs work really well. But the little species bulbs love those rooftop gardens, and green roofs are another great place for a lot of these little species tulips, smaller ones.
Yes, I was, I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, I was talking about the Tulipa springeri. Yes. I don't know if that's available in your catalog, but it's quite beautiful.
And I wish it were. it's one that it's a very stoloniferous little tulip, and it's not really produced in the bulb trade, but it reseeds quite readily, so it naturalizes, and it's a late bloomer. Now, we have one we like along those same lines that's a European tulip, which is a little better suited for our climate, and it's Tulipa sylvestris.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's stoloniferous. It's sylvan, woodland. Mm-hmm. It's a woodland tulip. So for those people in shade denial, this is one of those plants that will work in the shade that doesn't need sunlight to fully recharge its batteries. It'll grow in the shade. But it's wonderful, sweetly fragrant also.
And that brings me to kind of the point of the show. A lot of people think that, you know, bulbs can only be grown in certain situations. But actually, there's a bulb, if you use the word bulb broadly, for almost every condition, you know, whether it's a rock garden, whether you mentioned green roof, containers, woodland, just about any kind of condition except a swamp, I would imagine.
And you know what? We even have some bulbs that don't mind wet feet.
For example?
No, they're not as many. Lycodium aestivum, the summer snowflake.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it's an amaryllis, as are daffodils, and they're absolutely critter-proof. Nothing eats them, and they don't mind staying wet. The Fritillaria meleagris is another. Mm-hmm. The little guinea hen flower or snake's head Fritillaria.
That likes to stay wetter.
It's another one that doesn't mind wet feet. But, It grows right where the marsh marigolds are happily growing.
What about Camassia? That's a Native American,
Sacagawea or Sacagawea kept Lewis and Clark alive by feeding them Camassia bulbs. It grows in damp meadows, and but it wants sunlight.
Yes.
But it's another great one for damp meadows.
Yeah, I have that in my garden, and I really love it. It's so bulletproof, and I literally do nothing to it. It just comes back every year, year after year. I don't irrigate it. You know, whatever, you know, water it gets from the rain, it gets, and that's
indeed.
It. Well, we have to take a break, Brent. We're just a one-minute break, but when we come back, we'll talk some more about bulbs. Stay on the line. You're listening to We Dig Plants.
You are listening to Southern Pretender by Four Lincolns on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Wake up the children, clear the halls. This is something I've been through before. Not again. If our lives depend on it, so political. Analytical. Intellectual. Ineffectual. Create Southern Pretender, sister, mother, hide your children, ain't you under the pillow? Sleep on it, from man in the watch.
Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm.
Spanning the rolling hills of Vermont's Champlain Valley and easternmost Washington County, New York, 300-acre Consider Bardwell Farm was the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont, founded in 1864 by Consider Stebbins Bardwell himself. Rotational grazing on pesticide-free and fertilizer-free pastures produces the sweetest milk and the tastiest cheese. All of their cheeses are aged on the farm in their extensive system of caves.
Consider Bardwell Farm is also a big supporter of Heritage Foods USA's No Goat Left Behind program. No Goat Left Behind is a serious effort launched in 2011 by Heritage Foods USA, designed to introduce goat meat to American diners and provide a sustainable end market for dairy animals.
For more information, please visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Today we have Brent Heath as our guest, bulb connoisseur and founder of Brent and Becky's Bulbs of Gloucester, Virginia. So, Brent, I have to ask you some advice about a plant problem that I've had, something that I cannot grow. Now, I have killed a lot of plants over the years in my attempts to stretch my horticultural palate. and one plant that I have tried and tried and failed and have been unable to grow, and yet I still see it in every catalog, are the anemones. The Blanda types, the Dakayan types, those beautiful cut flowers, right?
They are. And Carmen, what plant zone are you trying to grow it in?
Seven.
Well, that should be good, sweetheart.
So now, what have
with
I
the
done
anemones,
wrong?
A couple of things. They are, I think they're rhizomes, you know, they're bulbs, corms, tubers, rhizomes, and tubers roots. I think they're rhizomes.
Yes.
They should be soaked overnight and be rehydrated. They'll plump up like a prune.
Okay.
And then they're somewhat hard to tell top from bottom.
Maybe that's
the
problem.
There's no pointy end up.
Yeah.
So Becky says, think of them as dinner plates, lay them flat on the ground, tip them up on edge like you might put dishes in a dishwasher, plates in a dishwasher, and plant them on edge. Mm-hmm. Then for sure roots go down and tops come up. Now bulbs, spring flowering bulbs root best at soil temperatures between 50 and 60 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you've had your first frost, typically ideal time for planting, or, you know, the soil's cool enough now. We've had good rain. And damp is also important, cool and damp soil. The bulbs should root well. Once they've rooted, they shouldn't freeze, but if you're afraid of their freezing, then maybe put a good mulch, a couple of inches of mulch on top.
Okay.
Now, anemone carinaria, the St. Bridget and Dakayan, are not as hardy as the anemone blanda.
Right.
Anemone blanda, and don't plant them too deep. Most bulbs go three times their height deep, but the anemones may be only an inch or two deep.
Oh, maybe that's what I've been doing wrong, planting them too deep, because I have tried and tried. I'm going to try one more time, Brent. with your advice.
Well, you know, I think you've got to try a plant a number of times until you find its happy spot. I say you have to kill it at least 7 times, each time in a different microclimate. Don't put it back in the same one you lost it before.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I have quite a list of plants I've killed, if they can only speak. Well, let's talk about some of your other offerings. You are offering, in your catalog, pre-cooled bulbs for southern gardeners, right? Previously, it was kind of difficult to grow spring bulbs if you lived where there wasn't a cold enough winter, right?
That's correct.
So you've solved that problem for people that live in Florida.
For the snowbirds.
Yeah.
Yes. But also, we solved a problem for people who find it difficult to pot bulbs up, root them, and again, they root best 50 to 60 degrees, and find refrigerator room for them.
Yes.
So we can simply give them their cooling and ship them to you in December after they've had all their vernalization and cooling requirement. You pot them up, root them at 50 to 60, and go ahead and force them for the winter.
I love that. I love forcing bulbs. There were quite a number of years when my fridge was half filled with food and half filled with potted bulbs, and I would say to my husband, don't eat what's in the brown paper bag.
That's right. And important, you may do them with food, but it's best to kick the beer out of the beer fridge and do them without fruits or vegetables for sure.
Right.
Because fruits and vegetables give off ethylene gas and can cause the bulbs to abort their blooms.
Ah, I see. Okay, good to know as well. Let's talk about some of the kind of rare and special things that, a little bit more unusual that you have in your catalog that people can't find readily.
All righty. Well, there are lots of fun things, and our catalog would have 3,000 things if it were inexpensive to print and the warehouse could hold them all. Well, one of the most unusual is a little bulb thought to be extinct in the wild called Tecophilia. It's a South American little bulb. They call it crocus, but it's not a crocus at all. It's called Tecophilia.
Mm-hmm.
And we love the color blue, and it's the bluest blue you've ever seen.
Wow.
There are actually 3 different ones available. It's still a bit pricey because there's not a big production of the bulbs yet.
Mm-hmm.
As more are produced, the prices tend to come down. But it's a lovely bulb for your rock garden or for containers.
Mm-hmm.
That blue color is just absolutely amazing.
And it's early. Is it early, like April?
It blooms from early through mid-season. And I also like that Ipthion because it blooms for such a long period of time.
It does.
And you mentioned Ipthion. Have you tried all the different hybrids that are available now?
No, I have.
We go from white-white.
No.
We have a starry white one. We have a rounded petaled white one. We have a pink one. We have the deepest blue one called Jesse and a little paler blue one called Rolf Fiedler and a paler blue one still called Wisley Blue.
Wow.
And then we have the straight species, which, of course, is quite variable.
I wonder what I planted. All I know is that it's indestructible. I mean, I literally dig around it, plant perennials on top of it. You know, I'm constantly rooting around in the garden, and every single year it seems to spread further and further.
It's a tough little cookie. And, you know, it's lovely when bulbs are critter-proof and critter-resistant. And this one is so critter-resistant because it smells a little bit like garlic breath when you crush the leaves or you crush the cut the bulb. Have you ever noticed that?
Yes.
Critters don't tend to like that.
No,
so much.
They don't. I know what I got excited in the cat. I got excited about in the catalog, and I'm going to order some tulip Peter. I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong, Brent. Peter de Lures, the lily flowered.
Oh, yeah.
I love lily flowered tulips.
And most lily flowering tulips are relatively late bloomers.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter de Lures is actually there's some Francophiles in the Netherlands, and they give the plants French names.
Yeah.
It's an early-blooming lily-flowering tulip, earlier. Now, unfortunately, I think they're gone for this season, so you've got to order them earlier next year.
I'll have to get on that. Another one that I loved was a parrot tulip. I'm not a huge fan of parrot tulips because I find that they you know, they don't seem to be as reliable, or the squirrels just like them better. But Madonna was a really beautiful one.
She's a beaut. Yeah. You like that little hint of green in her?
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. Now, the squirrels smell those sweet-smelling bulbs. You don't smell it. Mm-hmm. If you were to go in our tulip storage room, where we store at special temperatures with a lot of air movement, you'd smell a sweet smell. And you want to mask that sweet smell, so we spray on the bulbs and let it dry, or dip the bulbs in a repellent, so like a deer repellent, and that helps keep the squirrels and the underground bulb monster, the voles, away from your tulips.
That's really a good tip, Brent, because we've done various things for our clients. We've put the bulbs in cages. We've done all kinds of stuff to keep the squirrels at bay.
Sharp, crushed fingernail-sized gravel works quite well around the bulb. Voles have fairly tender paws. So they hit gravelly, sharp, crushed gravelly soil, and they don't... That'll deter them also.
That's good advice. Thank you. So we've talked a lot about spring bulbs, and bulbs are kind of synonymous with spring, but there are many, many bulbs or tubers or rhizomes that bloom in the summer and in the fall. And in fact, you publish a catalog just for those summer blooming things. Tell us about that, because I think people forget, you know, they know about the tulips and the narcissus and the crocus and those classic things that they plant in the fall and come up in spring. But there's a whole assortment, a huge assortment of plants that you plant in spring, or you can also plant them in the fall, that bloom much later and can continue the season of color much, much longer.
Indeed. Carmen, most of the spring flowering bulbs are montane, high mountain, desert plants. They need a cold period. Many of the summer flowering bulbs are from more temperate climates and actually benefit best from warmer soils. So most of these you plant when soils are above 60 degrees.
Right.
But there's some incredible tropical plants that actually, when we hold our tongues right and we treat them correctly, act as perennials in our climate, starting with the different elephant ears, the alocasias and the colocasias, and then we get into a group of begonias that don't mind our summer heat here on the East Coast, and we've got a hardy terrestrial orchid that's hardy probably through zone 6, little Blotilla. It's a Japanese orchid. It forms a rhizome. And then we've got the very tropical caladiums, which absolutely need warm soil, but are the most shade-tolerant of all the bulbs, with big, colorful leaves. And, there's some marvelous dahlias.
I know.
Mexican, Native American bulb.
I know.
Native Mexico, first used as a food crop, but the colors of the dahlias are incredible. And they're loving our cool fall nights. Ours are just blooming their heads off right now.
I know. This is a great time for the dahlias. I love dahlias, and I dig up my rhizomes or tubers, as it were, every year and save them because I'm very attached
to them.
Don't
wash them.
No.
Store them dry.
Yeah.
And then there are incredible pineapple lilies from South Africa, which should be hardy plants for you. Way they bloom over the whole period of the summer, and butterflies and hummingbirds love them. And then, of course, we do funeral flowers, gladiolas.
Yes.
And people don't do them because they fall over. They don't plant them deeply enough. Plant your glads 8 to 10 inches deep, and you have lovely structural sword-like leaves and every color in the rainbow. So
and
they're
people
kind
don't,
of fun to
yeah.
add a,
and they don't,
a linear
they,
look to your garden.
Yeah, and they have every color. You're right. That's every color of the rainbow. I think it got a bad rap because they do use them so much in funeral arrangements, but there's a lot of varieties that are sort of smaller and more delicate, and I think, you know, well suited for mixing in the border. You know,
indeed. And then a Native American bulb. This is Liatris. Our blazing stars are wonderful. Now, you know, they were taken to Holland because they're great cut flowers, and, you know, 80% of the bulbs grown are grown for cut flowers. We gardeners are only using 20%. But and then they're amazing lilies. Now, you know, lilies want to go deep, 8 to 10 inches deep, because they make roots above the bulb on the stem. and the bulbs like to stay cool. And the array of lilies, daffodils are my favorite plant, lilies my second favorite. I have hundreds of varieties in my garden. And my garden is planted in layers.
Yes.
Think lasagna-type layers.
Mm-hmm.
So I have one thing sequentially following another right in the same bed.
Mm-hmm.
And plants in the same bed together can be quite happy as long as they're not competing in the same season.
Yes.
So I start off with spring flowering bulbs. I overseed with some biennials and annuals, larkspur and bachelor's buttons and lettuce. Yes, I use vegetables right in my same flower beds.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great shoes and socks around the maturing daffodil or the blooming daffodils and tulips. That red lettuce is smashing with white tulips and daffodils. And then I have lilies in that same bed, and I've got perennials in the same bed. So
yeah, especially
you'll see
if
a
you
sequence from spring until fall.
Yeah, and I think it's great advice to, especially if you have, you know, people's gardens are kind of shrinking in size as people are limited by space and time.
Indeed.
And economies. So that's a really great way to plant. I wondered if you could tell, we have to kind of wrap it up, and unfortunately the half hour went by very, very quickly.
Indeed.
As it always does. I'd love
time
for you.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yes. Well, tell us about some, I know you lecture very widely. Tell us about some of your upcoming events, and if people, can they come and visit you at the farm?
Oh, Carmen, Becky has a lovely garden open 6 days a week. It's an 8-acre teaching garden with 21 themed idea garden rooms, open from 10 to 4 every day.
In Gloucester.
We'd love to have visitors, except January. That's the bleak month.
Yeah.
We do have a daffodil or two in bloom then,
mm-hmm.
but in any event, there's something in bloom all the time. We do a number of seminars and workshops here. I do a fun workshop where I help people to layer 5 layers of bulbs in one pot with a color theme to bloom at a similar time, either red, white, and blue, pink, white, and purple, yellow, red, and orange, called living flower arrangements. And I travel all over the country giving lectures and workshops and doing garden coaching, which is a new fun thing for me.
Yes.
I was at a wonderful garden in Bentonville, Arkansas yesterday. It's the Walton Museum of American art, and they have an incredible garden, and we're helping them to envision weaving bulbs into the fabric of their garden.
That sounds fantastic. Well, I'm going to put a link to Brent and Becky's Bulbs website on our Facebook page so that you can order bulbs. There's still some available. Brent, thank you.
Oh, we do indeed.
Yeah, you have many, many still. This is prime planting season for the Northeast and for the Middle Atlantic states, right? It's plenty.
Yes,
this
it is indeed.
Brent, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been listening to the Heritage Radio Network and We Dig Plants. Special thanks go out to our sponsor. Our show has been produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Joe G. Please remember to join our Facebook fan page to stay current on our current projects and upcoming shows. And you can win free stuff. We're going to be posting a slideshow of our favorite bulbs from Brent and Becky's catalog in the coming week. Thanks for listening. See you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.